Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Srividya Jongdala is an associate professor at ESSEC Business School. She is an expert in global strategy, geopolitics, and international business. Her newest book is The Great Disruption, How Geopolitics is Changing Companies, Managers, and Work. Welcome to the show, Srividya.
Thank you very much for having me. Excellent. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, more about your work, and what motivated you to write the book.
So, a part of me, whenever I think about the big global challenges, the global problems that we have, if you think about some of the biggest challenges we as humanity face, they tend to be what I think of as global problems. And so whatever comes to mind, whether it is conflict, whether it is the environment, whether it is feeding our growing population, these kinds of problems all tend to be what I think of as global problems, meaning they are problems that cannot be solved by individual states or individual companies, and we need some kind of collaboration or some kind of cooperation across nationalities, across countries, across different parts of the world, and really create a kind of unified effort to solve these kinds of problems. And that kind of led me to think about what are the ways in which we can create these opportunities for interaction, that we can create coordinated action. And certainly the private sector are thinking about the companies that do this. They are part of the solution. They may not be the only solution, but they are certainly part of the solution. And so I've always been interested in how we can allow these companies and facilitate the process by which these companies can expand internationally, create opportunities for them to invest confidently in other markets, and be a part of the solution that we really need them to engage in and participate in to solve all of the big challenges that we have. So that's what's been kept me interested in this topic, and that's how I came to thinking about these issues.
Yeah, I certainly appreciate that. What are some of the top issues that you think would be well served by this approach?
So one of the big issues is if we think about innovation. We tend to think about innovation, you know, the classic stereotype of innovation is you have this brilliant genius who comes up with an idea and suddenly there's a light bulb moment and, you know, so, and we have a brand new solution. The reality is, of course, very, very different from that. The reality is that it's painstaking work layer by layer, and it's usually a coordinated effort by lots and lots of individuals, groups, and actors. And one of the big benefits of corporate innovation is their ability to tap into different types of knowledge bases around the world. Their ability to try to look at a piece of information or a use case in one country and try to use that information or knowledge or the way it is being used and integrate it with what they already have and create a new solution. So this is, I think, one of the ways in which we have been seeing, certainly over the last 20, 30 years, we've seen a big increase in companies investing abroad for knowledge sake. This is not just for access to markets or not just for access to resources, but really to get information, to get knowledge, to get a new way of thinking, and not just in isolation, but to combine it with everything else that they do and really create novel, innovative ideas. And so I think that's really been a big way in which I think of how companies have utilized this global expansion in ways that are beneficial.
So it's not necessarily that there's a handful of issues. It's more a commitment to a more global understanding and understanding of how different markets and different countries are approaching work in general, problem solving in general will benefit everyone collectively.
I think so, yes. And certainly being able to not just tap into that different types of knowledge, but then to integrate it and to build it into a product or a service that utilizes this information.
And it certainly seems like we're closer to that than ever before, or farther away from ever before.
A little bit of both, yes. So on the one hand, companies have gotten better and better at managing this global knowledge business. But at the same time, if you look at the world today, there's a lot of geopolitical factors that would make it much harder for companies to invest abroad, that would make it much harder for them to have operations in far-off countries or to invest confidently in a new market. And so I think there's a lot of headwinds for companies that are for global companies that are trying to expand internationally or try to have international operations. And this wasn't necessarily always the case. If you think about 15, 20, 30 years ago, geopolitics was still relevant. It was very, very important, except it was opening markets. It was a set of factors where, companies suddenly realized they could invest in countries that were previously not open to them, or sectors were becoming, there was liberalization and deregulation. So companies suddenly had this option to create markets where they couldn't enter before. So it was certainly important, but it was much more of a tailwind. So most managers would be worried about how do I navigate a new country? How do I learn quickly? How do I adapt my products and services to a new market? But today we're having a different type of conversation. We are talking more about geopolitics as headwinds. We're talking about how companies really have to try to figure out how they can work around the politics or even think about the politics. They didn't spend much of the last 20 years thinking about these issues. And that's not because they don't care about it, but it was just something that was actually an enabler. And so they didn't have to spend a lot of mind space on this. I mean, managers are smart but busy people. So obviously what's going to be top of mind is going to be the problem, rather than what's just helping them solve problems or helping them to create new revenues and growth markets. So I think today we're having a very different type of conversation where many companies and certainly many managers around the world are thinking about, how do we navigate this geopolitical landscape where things are not as smooth as they used to be, or there are new types of challenges that we haven't really addressed before. And if you think about a lot of these people, the managers, the kind of senior managers of today came of age in a very different world, right? So they might have gone to business school 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and would have learned and built skills about the typical kind of market factors that we might think of: how to read a financial statement, how to market to old and new customers, how to optimize their supply chains. So these were the kinds of things that they would have come across in business school. And they came of age really in a very different environment. So all of their training, all of their experience helped them build skills that are quite different from probably what they need to do right now. So there's a lot of adaptation going on, a lot of experimentation going on. And really, a lot of people just asking, what do I do? Like, what's next? Like, how am I supposed to navigate this? And so I think it's a very different conversation that we're having today than even in the past.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. And that's the same question I was sort of thinking about, is it all sounds and makes perfect sense to me. Are there use cases that you point to and say this is an organization doing it well, or do you say these are some scenarios that I could see it really working perfectly in?
Yeah, so I think there's two fundamental aspects. One is the recognition of what is the geopolitical challenge. A lot of times we tend to think about this as, okay, so maybe it's about tariffs, maybe it's about supply chain, maybe it is about the cost of goods, and all of that is relevant, but in some sense that's only the symptom and that's not the cause. And I think from my perspective, what I see as the fundamental driving challenge for most companies, what is the real risk? The real risk comes down to where are you from? Like, where are you really from? Like, if you think about an organization, if you think about a company, what is this company's corporate nationality? Where is this company from? That's going to be driving the set of opportunities that it has or the kind of challenges that it has. Because a lot of the time, it doesn't have to do with the product quality or the innovativeness of the service or their efficiency in providing goods and services. But it really comes down to the location or where the company is from. And this is a tricky question, but that really is the main way that geopolitics is creating the risk or the set of opportunities. So if you are, for example, a shrimp farmer in India, then the shrimp that you export, let's say to the United States, face a very different tariff rate than if you are a shrimp farmer in, say, Ecuador. Now, arguably, a lot of this has to do with the fact that you are a shrimp farmer in India versus a shrimp farmer in Ecuador, right? And very little to do with the type of shrimp or the quality of the product or how good your cold storage system is or any of these other typical aspects that we tend to think about, right? So in a way, the real risk or the real opportunity for companies in how geopolitics is shaping them is then recognizing that it's not about, do I have a better product? It's not about, can I refine my product and make it better? Or the solution to geopolitical risk then is not, can I have a technological solution? That's in some sense not going to necessarily help you. If we think about also a company like Huawei, Huawei is a great example of a company in the United States. They faced a lot of pushback, not because their products were not good. Their products were good, but they face pushback because of where they were from, right? So I think that's the kind of dissonance in some way between what we can do and where we are from that drives geopolitical risk.
I think that that's really interesting. And I can certainly see the shrimp farmer in Ecuador versus India versus the Huawei. Just from my perception of that is that the United States was concerned that Huawei was going to, the government was going to be spying on citizens. So I think that was maybe, but maybe that's the whole problem, is that that's the perception.
But that's exactly right. The key challenge is what we might think of as a commercial decision, a business decision for a company. You know, most managers are thinking about, should I invest in this project or not? It's going to depend upon, you know, is this project viable? How long is it going to take to break even? Is there a market? Are there customers who are going to be paying for this? Like, what's the premium they will pay for it? These are the typical things we tend to think of when a company is making a decision. Should I invest or not? Right? The problem really is a company's investments create what we call externalities. That is, they impact others beyond the company. And those externalities include national security issues, we get governments that are really concerned about to what extent is the role of this individual company making simply a business decision to invest in a market or not invest in a foreign market. What is that impact going to be on national security? And this is why these are so intertwined. And so to give you another example, think of a company like NVIDIA. Now, NVIDIA would maybe in some circumstances look at the Chinese market and say, there's a market for chips. And as a business decision, it makes sense that I want to expand my market and I want to sell to customers who are willing to pay for this product. But you could easily see that the U.S. government might have reservations about that because of what those products could be used for. But you could also see that the Chinese government would have reservations about that because it creates dependence on a foreign actor. So what we think of as simply purely might be business decisions end up having larger spillovers to national security issues. And that's why I think these are completely intertwined. And foreign investment in a way is different from domestic investment because those externalities are also about national security.
So I'm a pretty reductive guy. And so you can tell me where it is that I'm wrong. Is the solution is not going to be from the top down. It's not going to be the United States getting together with China. It's the bottom up, and it's individual contributors at companies being open to learning, or am I?
So I think there's going to be a little bit of both. And what I mean by that is governments are going to set rules And they're going to do their jobs. They're going to set rules. They're going to create, they're going to look out for the externalities, and they're going to impose either opportunities or restrictions based on what they see as the positive or negative externalities. At the same time, who is going to be, what type of companies are going to thrive in this environment are going to be companies that have the ability to think creatively, the ability to identify different business models, the ability to think about their nationality in a way that is managed by them, the perception of that nationality is managed by them, so they are not seen as a threat necessarily. So I think it's a little bit of both. It's companies suddenly being creative and being utilizing this flux. Like every time there's flux, there's opportunity. Every time there's like this churn, there's opportunity. Now, will it be the same companies that were so far leading, going into the churn that come out the other side as again the leaders? Maybe or maybe not. But every time there's churn, we suddenly see new companies coming up. We see new business models being developed. We see a different way of engaging. So it's not going to be just, oh, this is bad, and everybody's, going to have an adverse impact. But suddenly, it's also going to be, there's going to be new winners in some sense.
I don't doubt that for a second. It's always, I don't know why I'm always surprised, but things can change so quickly. And some of the companies that we've already mentioned, I was not even aware of, or they didn't even exist not that many years ago. I'm sure that NVIDIA has been a company for a long time, but it hasn't been the most valuable company in the world for very long. And I didn't know what Huawei was before one of those controversies with the phones. And that's a long list of companies. And so things do change really quickly. And I think that that's an exciting thing. So I wrote down who's well positioned to advance this. Is there a responsibility in academia and business schools? It's the governments, it's really everybody.
I think it's a conversation among all of the different actors. For one, there's a lot of national security implications that governments are concerned about with good reason. We also want to be sure or more confident that these national security externalities are dealt with in accordance with the systems of governance and the safeguards that we have in place. But certainly it's also about companies trying to be, being innovative, thinking creatively, trying to understand what the main problem is before coming up with a solution, so that the solution actually matches the main issue rather than investing in lots of tangential parts which don't really address the main issue. And I think there's also definitely a role for business schools in that we are trying to put a spotlight on the issue in a way that it's integrated more now in the curriculum. But also, this is about constant. I mean, the days of you go to school, you get a degree, and then you're done learning, I think, are long past. So we are constantly having this upgrading of skills and constant learning. So whether that is through, executive education or other types of programs, there's certainly a, I think, a role for business schools as well to really bring to light some of the research that we know, some of the maybe a little bit more nuanced thinking about this that we know from different types of research that has already been done on the topic, or kind of trying to find the parallels between historical and current issues. So I think there's a role certainly in that aspect as well.
It's certainly any time. Well, I don't know how many MBAs are working at small little micro companies, and I don't know if that's not good or bad. And I know that Google certainly has the resources to be dedicating to these things. I guess my question is this: is there a size of company that we're talking about here, or that's limiting thinking too? Because any company can go online and learn about how other companies are solving these problems in different countries all over the world.
Yeah, there's certainly a size effect, and the larger companies have resources that smaller companies don't. The larger companies certainly have the ability to have a dedicated desk that is just following like the breaking news and constantly gaming different scenarios and trying to come up with what would help the company. So I do think that's maybe an advantage for larger companies in their ability to put together this information and try to understand the world and draw parallels from different types of situations. But I don't think the advantage is fully necessarily with the large companies. In fact, I think it's the smaller companies that once they pick up on a trend are able to change course faster. They're able to pivot faster. They're able to find, and they're willing to experiment with more radical solutions. They're willing to try new things, or it's easier for them to do that. Think about, if you think about a company like Google or any large multinational company with tens of thousands of employees and, kind of in 50 or 100 different countries around the world, that's a very large elephant to kind of turn around. But smaller companies are definitely much more nimble. They're the ones who have the advantage in that sense of responding quickly or experimenting with new business models. So I don't think the advantage is necessarily only for the large companies.
No, that certainly makes sense, and the way you described that is perfect. And as you were telling that, just sort of sharing that with me, I thought about reading Shoe Dogs, which is the Phil Knight biography about how Nike got started. And Nike's now one of the biggest companies in the world, but it certainly was not that long ago where it was just him going around the world trying to figure out how to manufacture shoes. So these things again happen very quickly. And I imagine that my bias is obviously companies that are located inside the United States, but there's probably an infinite number of stories of innovations that have come from companies outside the United States doing business everywhere, and certainly the United States. So interesting.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I think this is one of the joys of studying international business, where you see how different even very, companies in the same industry or the same sector tend to approach things very differently, how they're conditioned by the environment or their institutional infrastructure. So I think it's really very interesting to kind of look at how different companies adapt, different companies are competing across the world.
Yeah. Well, Shrivati, sorry about that. Shrivati, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they connect? And most importantly, where can they get their copy of The Great Disruption?
So the best place is probably my website. That's s-jandhyala.com. And the book is available in most major bookstores and certainly online.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, so show Shrivati your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Pick up your copy of The Great Disruption: How Geopolitics is Changing Companies, Managers, and Work, wherever you buy your books. We'll certainly link that in the notes. And then go to s-jandlayala.com and learn more about Shrivati. And I will certainly link all those in the notes of the show as well. Thanks again, Shrivati.
Thanks very much for having me.
Until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.